There is NFL news in May. We're looking at the Cowboys' contract decisions. The Dolphins give big money to a cornerstone player. Telvin Smith catches the Jaguars by surprise, and the Patriots get busy. We're breaking it all down on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. She is Jenny Brentis. No Andy Benoit this week. Jenny, I'm glad you're here because Andy's gone and producer Brandon Nix and I gets lonely in here. I think it might be haunted in the studio. So it's nice to have another person in here with us.
Well, I'm glad that I made it, given my confusion on the recording time.
We did. So yeah, I always call it the Monday podcast for short, which causes absolute chaos with the taping schedule, because then I'm just throwing out a series of days in every text and email I send to people. So yeah, Jenny thought we were maybe taping on Monday.
It's my fault because I didn't read the messages clearly enough. I was enjoying a ham sandwich when I said, yeah, I'm coming down to the office, thinking that we met on Monday.
It was all very who's on first.
Correct.
But you're here.
I've made it.
And you made it in record time too. This was your stock would be rising if we were covering the NFL draft right now.
A personal best for me.
Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do this week, I'd say it's a little bit different. We kind of have to do like a news catch-up. There have been, I don't know if these are major headlines, but they're significant headlines around the league, and it's going to be a little bit of a potpourri show. Does that sounds about right?
It's befitting this time of year, I think. We're really entering the slow season here.
Yeah, we kind of are. But
there are things happening still.
There are. And we're actually going to start with Dallas. A couple of reports here. First of all, Jane Slater of NFL Network reported that the Cowboys have offered Dak Prescott a deal, and they're waiting for a counteroffer, which I don't think anyone thinks Dak Prescott won't be signed to some kind of contract. What he'll get will be interesting, because as we've talked about on our show with Andy, it's our show, and when referring to Andy at this point. I'm sorry, Jenny.
No, it's all right. I'm glad.
Dak might take a little bit less, because when you're the Cowboys quarterback, there's a chance to make a little bit more outside of just playing quarterback.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those situations where his value is greater there for a lot of reasons, right? I mean, he's a guy they want to keep. You know, you have value off the field as a Cowboys quarterback. So I think that both sides sort of recognize that this is the right place for him to be. And so I think because of that, the numbers aren't going to be as high as some of the record-breaking deals. I just don't know what the number would be. If this initial offer is much lower than what he wants, then it could get interesting.
Yeah. Jeff Darlington of ESPN reported that they are prioritizing Dak, as we expected, but also Amari Cooper over Ezekiel Elliott at this point. And look, Zeke does have, with the fifth-year option, he is signed through 2020 as it stands right now. The rest of these guys, Dak, Amari Cooper, not to mention Lyle Collins, Jalen Smith, and Byron Jones, they're all up after 2019. So there might be a little more natural urgency than there is with Ezekiel Elliott. But, you know, I remember when they drafted Zeke, and part of what Stephen Jones said to explain that pick, I think he said this to Albert, it was like, well, this is a running back's prime, like age 21 to 25. This is his prime. We'll pay him right now with a sort of, what is a relatively large deal on the rookie wage scale when you're talking about running backs, not other positions, but for running backs, that's good money that he got. And now it's a question of what do they do now? I mean, he's not only an all-pro running back, he's been, without a doubt, the centerpiece of that offense.
Yeah, and the Gurley situation is what makes this very interesting, because the Rams gave Gurley a deal after year three, which is where Elliott is, and then Gurley hit this health, bump in the road, right? We saw his production tail off at the end of last season, now he's got this big contract extension that you're looking at the amount of money that he's earning for a guy that the team's going to now have to be cognizant of his workload. And this is always the question for running backs. It's because, as every time they go on the field, right? I mean, you're taking carries, you're taking a beating that sort of undercuts your value a little bit. And so Gurley's was a really reset the market. I mean, completely, right? Yeah. It was, I mean, the market had really sagged and then Gurley's bumped up the value. But because of that, in Zeke's case, you know, the Cowboys have options where a franchise tag would not be, you know, if they were to get through, they have two more, they can get through two more years on his rookie deal, and then they have a franchise tag option, which might not be astronomical, right? So there isn't an urgency to get it done, really.
Yeah. And I mean, the only threat they really run is holdout, which obviously is a threat, and how unhappy will Elliott be with that arrangement? But you look at the same thing. I mean, look, Le'Veon Bell tested the open market. It was a good contract he got, but it was not what he thought he'd get or what he thought he earned.
Right, yeah. And, the, you know, the Bell situation is a good comparable here because the team was able to keep him, you know, on the tag for at least the first year, right? And, you know, they did make him long-term offers. So, you know, obviously every situation is slightly different. But I would say that while last summer it looked like the Gurley situation was promising, the way the season ended for Gurley really, I think, changed, you know, how teams are looking at it a little bit. And of course, every situation is different. I mean, Gurley came into the league with knee issues, right? So it's not, you know, every player is not the same. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think that the Cowboys would be probably smart to wait. And I think that they've set that up, right? They're basically saying, oh, we're going to get to Elliott, but it's not at the top of our list right now.
And Jerry has basically just flat out said, people are going to have to take a little less, and you get to be a Dallas Cowboy, and you get to be a legend if you win as a Dallas Cowboy. Which, look, I don't appreciate it as someone who thinks these guys should be maximizing their earning power, but he's honest about it.
It's a delicate balancing act the Cowboys have to walk, right? Because they're gonna, it makes smart sense to address these other situations first. But then is Elliott saying, you know, I'm the guy that makes your offense go, why am I waiting?
Exactly. I mean, they've been so much worse when Elliott has been out of the lineup. The thing that really fascinates me, and I don't know how long they can put off an Elliott extension, is they switched offensive coordinators. Kellen Moore is presumably going to bring something, let's call it forward thinking as far as the offense goes. And can they unlock, you know, Andy describes Dak lovingly as sort of a high-end game manager, and can he be more than that? And this is, you'll kind of find out maybe in 2019 if he can be.
Yeah. The problem is that for the Cowboys, you know, Elliott knows his value to the team, and he knows that, like you said, the team has not been anywhere near as good, and that he's, you know, the engine for the offense. So if he really wants to put pressure on the team, he can.
All right. Before we move on across the rest of the league here, a big deal. And what if Andy's the sad part about Andy missing the show is one of his favorite players got signed, and now he's
going to
miss
Howard
out.
Is a
no,
favorite.
No, not Xavien Howard.
Oh,
we'll if you listen to the show, the Patriots signed a wide receiver. Today, it actually happened today, the day we're taping, and he is a favorite of Andy's.
Okay.
But we'll get to it, but first, a quick programming note. If you go one back in your feed, you'll get the second episode of Bad Football Movies, I believe is what we are terming these. I've listened to both of them. I just can't remember what Connor is titling them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it started as Bad Football Movies, but unfortunately, that's probably not an apt title because some of these are probably going to be pretty good football movies.
We're going to have to be, look, I would have called Any Given Sunday, maybe not bad. Brandon and I talked about this the other day. I think it's a slightly below average movie. I think it would have been better as like a 1 hour TV show than a, I don't know, what was that, like 7 hour slog that they ended up doing, Oliver Stone. But that is what they're doing on the previous episode in your feed on Bad Football Movies.
I only watched part of Any Given Sunday, and I haven't watched most of these films, so.
Robert Klemko at the end, I don't want to spoil the episode, but Robert Klemko is the special guest at the end of the show, gives an impassioned defense of Any Given Sunday, and does raise some good points.
It may be reassessed a little bit. Okay.
It is, I believe it's his favorite movie.
Oh,
But you can hear his defense of Any Given Sunday, and you can hear him talking about the male nudity in that movie as well, which made it very awkward to watch in the office in a like glass window here where everyone can see what you're watching.
So at least fast forward to the end to get that.
Yeah.
If nothing else.
there are words said on that podcast that I didn't know we could say on these podcasts. I don't know. Let's move on around the league. Xavien Howard. If you ever lent Xavien Howard like $10 back in the day, you went to college or high school with him and he never paid you back and you've been feeling awkward about confronting him about it, now's a good time. Xavien Howard is very wealthy. We're waiting on the exact structure of the contract. We do know it's $46 million in guarantees, whether that's full guarantees or what it may be. But Xavien Howard, Miami Dolphin, he will be there for the next couple of seasons. And this is nice for Brian Flores.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because they've been facing all of these "are you tanking" questions. And I think tanking is probably, they've hated that word, which every team hates the word tanking. So I think more accurately, they're just sort of reshaping the team in their image, right? So they're getting rid of the guys they don't like and they are doing things to acquire players they do like. So Xavien Howard is a player that they really like. They give him a big extension. They say this person is a building block of our team for years to come. I think it makes sense because he's the kind of cornerback that New England has, bigger, physical, right? He had a ton of interceptions last year. So I think, you know, someone like Christian Wilkins and Xavien Howard, these are, you know, he's trying to pick players that, you know, you always hear about how the Patriots have like a small draft board, right? And they have certain players that they want on their team because they fit a specific role or a specific, position is not the word I'm looking for because it's not just, okay, you do play a specific position, but you, I don't know.
Specific role.
The specific role that they fill on the team is very, they have clear ideas for roster building. I think that's what we're seeing in Miami, right? And I hate to use the whole New England analogy for every Belichick disciple that goes elsewhere, because I do think Flores is committed to doing things his own way. And I think he is, because of that, I think, you know, I'm interested to see how things go, because I do think he has a great way of leading, and I think he has a clear vision for what he wants. But it would be foolish to say that someone who spent his entire career in New England is not building things in a similar manner. And I think they're just picking off building blocks that they want. And a couple of years ago, we saw the Patriots sign Gilmore, which was uncharacteristic. They gave him a deal that was bigger than they normally give, but they wanted an anchor at that cornerback position, and I think that's similar with Howard.
Yeah, and look, in our defense, Brian Flores has only worked in New England under Bill Belichick, so that we do have good reason to specifically tie him to the Patriots and how they've done it. Xavien Howard was, I think, like 3 or 4 weeks into the season last year, it looked like he was going to be a breakout star. We'd be talking about him. I think he was easily one of the top 10 corners in football last year. I think he was a little more up and down than maybe you'd want to say. But look, Stephon Gilmore was a little bit rocky early on in New England. I think it was some communication problems on the back end there. And we all saw Stephon Gilmore last year was the best cornerback in football. You'd think that that's within the realm of possibility for Xavien Howard to ascend to basically an elite level of cornerbacking here. And when you look back at the Patriots, whether it was Gilmore, and his star turn last year, or going back to Revis, when they've had a true number one cornerback in those defenses, they've been really good defenses.
Yeah, like you see a lot of investment on the back end because that's so important to the scheme. And you're right, the inconsistency was the one thing with Howard, and I think, as you pointed out, that was true with Gilmore until he came to New England, right? And I think the coaching there, they sort of challenged him to play different ways, techniques that at first he wasn't entirely comfortable with, or maybe consider playing different receivers in different ways that you've never tried before. And I think so you did see that kind of coaching sort of take this really talented player up to the next level. And I don't think it's crazy to think that Howard would do the same in Miami.
Yeah, I think realistically it might take a year. I think 2020 is when you might see sort of the ceiling for Howard, but this is good. This is a nice move for Miami, and it's good to know he's going to be around for a while. It seemed like he was an obvious guy they had to retain there. But Telvin Smith, a very strange story. Telvin Smith is walking away for a year, is what he has announced via Instagram. It very much seemed to have caught the Jaguars off guard. Now, I feel like we'll learn more about this over the next couple of weeks, but the Jaguars were shopping him. They were publicly shopping him. They were, you know, I don't know if this was a matter of not sort of managing your player's feelings who has signed a four-year deal with your team. But Telvin Smith played in an elite level at 2017, probably was a little bit less than that in 2018, but still certainly a guy you want in that defense. Just talking about the Jaguars in general, I feel like I don't want to say the window is closed.
But it feels like
the window has closed. It feels like when you try to build around an elite defense like this, and you kind of saw it in Denver, boy, you have to be like, to maintain that level, it's just so difficult. I don't think it's necessarily a bold statement to say when you have a really good quarterback, you can just have a great offense and you can live off of that. But to make it work, the level that the Broncos played at in 2015 or what the Jaguars played at in 2017, it's just so difficult to maintain that top level, and not much has to go wrong for you to sort of fall off the tightrope.
That's exactly right. Because on offense, the quarterback can make up differences in other areas, right? But on defense, you really need 11 players working together, and you need, you know, good players at more than one position to make it work. I mean, obviously you need some of that on offense, but it's you know, you just need more things on defense to happen together. The other thing that's always true, and I have covered a lot of teams, having covered Rex Ryan in New York, I covered a lot of teams that were defense first, and there's like always, it always creates some kind of issue in the locker room if the offense is not as good. If the defense is the better unit, you often see locker room discord develop over time, which we certainly saw with Jacksonville last season, frustration with the offense. The other way around, it's sometimes a little bit, but like, you know, obviously Kansas City last year, right? But you didn't see that internal strife. I mean, obviously there were frustrations, I'm sure, among the coaching staff that the offense had to put up this number of points every week, but it didn't seem like the same kind of, you know, locker room grievances.
It feels like because that's a reality, the way the rule book is structured now, I mean, you should be scoring a lot of points in the NFL. Like that's the expected, and not to mention the quarterback is the face of your franchise. Most teams, he is, if not now the highest paid player, will soon be the highest paid player,
right?
And so on and so forth. But
yeah, the Smith situation was weird though. The Jaguar statement, like you said, really indicated that they didn't quite know what was going on. And you know, one loss on defense that really I think made a difference last year was they losing Paul Posluszny, who had been a fixture there for a long time. He retires, and I felt like in a lot of ways he was kind of the glue that kept that unit together. Obviously, he was on the back end of his career and had to do a lot to keep his body able to play every week. But he's just one of those veteran players that I think helped that unit, you know, stay together the season before.
That's a great point. I had not thought of Paul Posluszny.
Well, you know, Penn Staters are always top of mind. We were contemporaries at Penn. So I covered Paul in college, actually, at Penn State. We were, you know, the same age. So he was a captain for the Nittany Lions when I wrote for the Daily Collegian, Gary.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just want to read this Jaguar statement really quick because, to be honest, this reads like a statement that was written in panic and like was like a rough draft and someone else was supposed to review it before it went out
to
the public.
That's a great description.
We will not have a comment about Telvin Smith's statement at this time. We need to have a conversation with Telvin to understand the situation and the circumstances. If there is a way we can support him, we need to understand that.
It seems like the degree of confusion that reigned earlier this afternoon when you thought I was on my way into the office and I thought I was coming in 3 days later.
It took two phone calls and an email before we realized we were talking about two different days.
Two different days, yeah. Right. But it conveyed a sense of worry as well. I mean, there were some points of the statement, right, that alluded to things happening off the field. So you sort of wonder, is everything okay with the player? Was it just the the name, his name servicing in trade discussions, which I know Albert Breer had reported as well. There were one of those situations that I think will probably take a few weeks to fully understand what's going on.
Yeah. Ah, Jacksonville. So much hope this time last year.
Yeah, right? I mean, this time last year, well, I went to a training camp, you know, last year, and, you know, obviously coming off the AFC Championship game, and the furor at the refs was, you know, still reigning supreme in the city, but they felt like they were going to make up for it that year, and they were on the right track, and just really one of those teams that did a 180.
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about them plenty in the lead up to the season here, but it seems like they have some maybe mismatched pieces on offense, and now if that defense is not going to play at their 2017 level, let's keep it positive, but a lot of these stories are bummers left on the rundown here.
They are.
I mean, poor Jason Pierre-Paul in a car accident that as far as all the reporting and what the authorities have said about it does not sound like it involved any sort of whether it be alcohol or distracted driving on his part. It sounds like it was just an accident, but he might miss all of 2019 at this point.
Yeah, there was a later report, I think NFL.com said he might try a non-surgical approach, but really, you know, probably won't play or won't be much of a factor this coming season, regardless of what route he chooses. He's had some really unfortunate twists and turns to his career, from being like this fantastic hit of a draft pick in New York, and then obviously the fireworks, and now this, just some situations that have really kind of taken his career on some difficult detours.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Bucs do up front, because it sounds like, as our friend, our best friend Albert Breer has reported, Gerald McCoy seems unlikely to be on the roster when they're going to try and find a trade partner, but seems unlikely to be on the roster when the season starts. So they have some changes up front, and it's kind of like you look at the Bucs roster and you say, okay, well, transition year. They're in a tough division. This is, they're still feeling things out with the quarterback and all that. But I mean, you bring in Bruce Arians. It's kind of like you got a win now coach. You got to figure out where your quarterback is and whether you can win games with him. They're in a weird spot. It's just a really strange team.
That's a great point, Gary, because like you know, the coach timeline doesn't seem to match up with the team timeline. I agree. They're definitely a team in transition. I don't think expectations are particularly high. I think most people, when we did our power rankings on the MMQB last week, right, most people have the Bucs in the bottom three, I think, you know, in terms of expectations for this season. Obviously, losing Pierre-Paul is just another knockdown. But yeah, I don't know. What Bruce Arians, did he come back to spend a year, you know, seeing if he can make it work with Winston, right? I mean, it doesn't seem like an exciting prospect necessarily.
Well, yeah, I guess if Bruce Arians gets his offense putting up 30 points a game, it's all a moot point, and you can win with what they have anyway. It's an interesting defensive roster. You bring in Devin White. They brought in some size and athleticism on the back end. I'll miss Brent Grimes. It seems like he had been there forever.
Yeah.
Covering Julio Jones and doing it quite admirably for a small corner, and now they finally brought in all these big guys in their secondary. But that's a weird team. This is going to be a weird year for Tampa. It could go in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about it last week on one of the other podcasts, and just a team that is easy to miss things, right? Like I hadn't even. Arian's comments about McCoy, you know, not being up as disruptive as he was in the past, I entirely missed those, right? So it just seems like they're just a little bit off the radar right now.
Yeah.
Great first round pick, but other than that.
They could have like a solid year, offense could improve, and they end up going in that division. I mean, Falcons are going to be much better. You got to deal with the Saints, are obviously a Super Bowl contender. The Panthers, if Cam's going to be 90% of Cam, they're probably going to make a run at 10, 11 wins. And, you know, Bucks could have a good year and go 7-9, 8-8, and we probably won't talk about that much anyway.
Until it's draft season, yeah. And even then.
Seattle. So Doug Baldwin, and I apologize to everyone, we're going to shortchange Doug Baldwin just slightly. Andy and I did discuss him two shows ago on the Monday podcast. We were anticipating he would be retiring. He is officially done in Seattle now. And they are going to have an incredibly difficult time replacing him. There's no one on that roster right now who you'd look at and say they can fill that sort of elite slot role. Baldwin did more than the slot, but he was also kind of the only guy on that roster who did do the slot, and he did it so well. That's not really Tyler Lockett's game. It's certainly not DK Metcalf's game or David Moore. So we'll see what happens there. But they went out. Russell Wilson has a big contract. They're trying to build around him on the cheap a little bit. They have to figure out what they're doing with Bobby Wagner after the season. But in the short term, they brought in Ziggy Ansah, and they brought in Jamar Taylor as well, a couple of veterans on this defense. I don't know if I'm buying on Ansah helping.
I'm not really either. Yeah. I think it's just sort of a veteran stopgap until Collier develops, right?
Yeah.
Take a little, you figure... You sign him at this period of time, right? You can just kind of take chances on some of these guys or just fill out the roster a little bit, yeah.
It's tempting because in his prime, like Ziggy Ansah in this defense where, the ends do a lot of looping and stunting and he'd be a great fit. But I don't know if he can do it physically anymore.
Right, yeah. That seems where, he seems to have petered out in that category.
Can I further infuriate Seahawks fans? This won't infuriate Seahawks fans, but I've always felt bad for Jamar Taylor because look, no one tracks like number three cornerback wins. I just happened to notice last year he was on some ridiculous like 21 game personal losing streak because he went from Cleveland to Arizona, and he's 3-42 over his last three seasons in games that he's been active for.
That's a great stat, but it's a sad stat.
And look, it's not, no one's, Jamar Taylor is not the reason that the Cleveland Browns went 0-16 two years ago and all that, but whenever I see his name, I'm very sorry. That's what I think of, because he was on a ridiculous like one-man losing streak.
What prompted you to track that?
I think I just noticed him on Arizona's roster, or maybe I was just being a jerk and looking for ex-Browns who were there for the 0-16 season and not there for the following season once they got their first win over the Jets on that Thursday night.
But, right, yeah. See where those people ended up and how long it took for them to get a win.
Yeah.
And for Jamar Taylor, there haven't been a lot of those.
This is really about me being a jerk more than anything else, but...
He's in a spot where he could get some more.
This is a good landing spot. I look at the Seahawks, and again, we're going to break all these teams down very much. The Seahawks, you've lost Frank Clark on one side of the ball and Doug Baldwin on the other side of the ball. They won 10 games last year. It wasn't an easy 10 wins.
It was not.
There are no easy wins. I mean, no one's going out there and winning games at 40 points. But it feels like they just walk a very fine line. They're always much better at home than on the road. It just feels like I wouldn't be shocked if this team fell to like 6-10.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel like they were teetering, right? And last year, certainly, there were points where you would never have thought they would make the playoffs.
You just wonder when the roster drops to a certain point. I don't know. I had said last year, I was arguing with a bunch of people about their over-under win total. I think it was 8.5 was the number, and obviously they went over. But I was making the argument, just culture-wise, you have Russell Wilson, you have Bobby Wagner. How bad can you really have a losing record, those two guys on the roster? And it seems like we inch closer to finding that threshold every offseason with them.
Yeah, right. That's a good point. 8.5 was their over-under entering the season.
It was either 8 or 8.5. And all the guys here, all the gambling guys here, and I do the gambling podcast with Jimmy Traina.
Grambling on gambling. And
Scott Gramling. But everyone who gambles here was like, oh, Seahawks under, such an easy bet. And I was like, I don't know.
For Gary.
Yes. That was, don't go back and listen, but that was the only prediction I made last year.
Well, let's just focus on that one then. Yeah, that's the only one that's worth talking about.
Zach Brown to the Eagles. The Eagles find their stopgap linebacker here to fill in for Jordan Hicks. I guess the only reason I want to, number one, he's going to play a lot of snaps for a team that's a Super Bowl contender. So this is noteworthy. The Eagles have never made a major investment in their linebackers, so it's not shocking that they didn't go out and make a big splash, and whether it be paying Hicks or chasing someone else. Zach Brown ranked third in Pro Football Focus's grades last year for linebackers, which was
really?
I think he's a fine sort of, you know, I'm trying to think of a kinder way to phrase this, but bottom tier starter, but towards the bottom tier of the starters, and I think used in Washington would back that up, and so would watching him play. But I don't know. There are some game charters who really like Zach Brown, I guess.
That's interesting. Yeah, and the fact that he's on the market for a while supports your point as well.
Yeah, that too.
But they have a very complete roster, though. I mean, this was a case of them like, okay, we have a little bit of a need at this position, but really otherwise, their roster doesn't have a ton of needs.
Yeah.
That's why they can, like, you know, they see a guy like Dillard slipping or falling to near their area in the draft. And they make a move to get a really good player that probably should have gone earlier. But, you know, that's another like example of the flexibility you have when you have a pretty complete roster.
Yeah. I mean, as long as Wentz stays healthy, and I think that was a big issue last year when he came back. Obviously, he got hurt again, and that was a even bigger issue. Just having him get an entire summer in, and I don't really see a reason he won't return to an MVP caliber level. I'm not saying he's going to win MVP, but you know, you got a top five quarterback coming back to your lineup. Eagles should be right back in it this year.
Yeah, and I liked the way that he handled everything. That the team handled all the talk about, you know, was there, you know, divide in the locker room, and you know what, they kind of took it head on. They didn't say,
yeah.
They said there are areas you can improve in. He's a young guy. He's still learning how to lead a team. I thought that was a really good approach rather than being like, there's no truth to any of this.
This is the part of the show. Andy's going to be listening and he's going to be
not
so
like
sad.
This.
He's going to be so sad he missed it. He's going to have like a single tear rolling down his cheek as he figures out that we missed. I'm going to say these are going to be two of Andy's favorite signings of the offseason. One, the Patriots have added an unretired Ben Watson, and Andy does like Ben Watson. Everyone likes Ben Watson. He's a super nice guy, and he's I mean, he was a 2004 first round pick for the Patriots, and he's still he basically went from a guy who was like pure athlete coming out of Georgia, and now he's like the savvy veteran tight end. And I think Andy will appreciate the fact that I mean, Ben Watson's better than Austin Seferian Jenkins, so this is a nice ad for the Patriots here. Neither of them are Rob Gronkowski, and that's still a problem they have to deal with. But Ben Watson is a really nice addition for this team.
Yeah, and it made a ton of sense, right? I mean, I don't know. I think N'Keal Harry will really be they're going to use him. I think in a lot of ways that. I don't know, maybe some of the similar ways that Gronk was used, because he's, you know, obviously a bigger bodied guy. But this is just, you know, this is just typical Patriots, right? You add a player that's very familiar with the way you do things and a veteran player that just plugs in and is not a flashy signing by any means, but probably makes a difference in a few games.
But the headliner for Andy Benoit. Dontrell Inman. He loves Dontrell Inman. Dontrell Inman, the route running maestro, who Andy every year when he's not signed, Andy's just like, every wide receiver signing he doesn't like, you could have just had Dontrell Inman.
That's his like go-to benchmark.
Dontrell Inman is Lord knows if he'll even make the roster because they have so many wide receivers there for the Patriots, but he would be really interesting with Tom Brady. I'm not going to sit here and say like, oh, he'll basically be a second Julian Edelman or something, but he's the kind of guy who would like rack up, if he was going to play full time in a Tom Brady led offense, he'd rack up like 85 catches easily.
Wow. You guys are really high on Inman.
and he's really high on Dontrelle Inman.
Is precise route running?
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
That's something to take home.
That's right in Brady's wheelhouse.
Andy's so happy right now.
It's really a bummer because I don't think I'm conveying the proper enthusiasm, Gary, no, for this signing.
This
was really a week when, you know.
If Andy was here, this would have been the lead item for this week's show.
I feel like the gap between me and Andy is even more exaggerated this week because I can't convey such enthusiasm for Inman. Go Inman.
That's
a little better.
Moving in the right direction.
I was watching the Cardinals, you know, behind the scenes of their draft room, and gosh, I forget which pick it was. One of the picks they called, and he was like, "Hello," and Steve Keim was like, "Hey," he's like, "How are you?" He's like, "Don't sound too excited." So that's me right now.
The other Patriot signing, Jared Veldheer, the offensive tackle. I would think every guy who's like a swing tackle in the league right now who thinks they might have a payday left should just go to New England.
Totally.
After seeing what happened with Trent Brown. Not that there's anything wrong with him, but Trent Brown would not have gotten the kind of money he got last year if he was still in San Francisco as like a swing tackle.
I wonder if he gave Scarnecchia a gift.
Oh, he probably owes him.
Yeah, like a slice of his new contract. You know, maybe you send him a cheesecake or something.
I mean, Tom Brady's contract is not very big, so maybe he can share a little bit of that with Brady.
Okay.
I mean, Brady. Yeah. So the fact that Brady is it's part Scarnecchia, especially in the run game, and then it's Brady. I mean, Brady is so good within the pocket. He just doesn't take sacks. He never makes...
Right.
And an offensive lineman will never be made to look bad by Tom Brady.
So you can't send a cheesecake to Brady, but he could send something else.
Yeah.
Share a little money with the...
Just cash. He just needs cash.
Straight cash.
Their cash. He and Giselle could use a little bit of help towards the end of his career here. The Bears have added another kicker.
Oh my gosh!
Kicker trades are interesting. So Albert, Jenny, and Connor on last Wednesday's show talked about the kicker, the psychology of the kicker competition,
right,
in Chicago going on. They traded a seventh rounder for Eddie Pinheiro, who I don't think has kicked in a regular season game yet. He was one of the better kicking prospects 2 seasons ago out of Florida, but
yeah, I mean, this is just. I don't know. Once a thing becomes a thing, you know what I mean? Like once a kicking issue becomes an issue, then it's just really hard to shake.
I just feel like they should just bring back Cody Parkey.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, well, the 49ers said they're not trading Gold, but I thought you were going to say Gold.
No, I figure...
Another contemporary Penn Stater of mine, by the way.
Oh, so, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah,
I was going to say, if you could really play Captain Hindsight, you just go back a couple years and keep Robbie Gould. But
right.
I thought they should have just sent Parkey back out there. I thought the whole thing just so blown out of proportion.
The Today Show interview really seemed to set them off.
Yeah.
Because the comments right after that, right? The team was saying it's not about I. They seemed to be really upset that he had done the Today Show interview.
I mean, if anything, the Today Show interview... emphasize the fact that, or I should say, de-emphasize the fact that the kick got blocked. The kick got blocked is why it missed.
Right.
It was not Cody Parkey had his issues last year, but
that
kick got blocked.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I wonder if other things happened, you know, that sort of created friction there, because the response to the Today Show interview seemed to be disproportionate.
Yeah, it did. It just, I mean, look, there are, you could pinpoint 1,000 things during that game or during the Bears season that sort of led to the chain reaction that ended in a wild card round loss, but I don't know. I feel bad for kickers. That's basically what we've come down to. And we've also, I mean, we have now spent like 2 minutes talking about kickers. That's 2 more minutes than we've ever talked about kickers on the Monday podcast.
So,
because Andy will not discuss it.
Would you say that's a value add or?
Andy was just thrilled to hear about Dontrelle Inman, and now he's devastated to hear about kickers. So this has evened out for him. We have a one-man audience here.
I'm really disappointing Andy Benoit is really what this is coming down to.
The last note here, and I'm just mentioning this guy because I like him, and it seems like everyone around the league likes him. Derek Anderson. I don't know if he officially retired last year and then unretired to come back to the Bills, or what the scenario was, but he is retiring, and apparently he's a really good golfer, which good for him because he came back. Remember, he came back for that Patriots Monday night game and just got wrecked.
Yes, that was a tough circumstance. The biggest news to come out of that was the Pro Football Talk headline, which it said Ken Dorsey would, and made it sound like Ken Dorsey was coming in to play rather than coach.
Did it? Wait, yeah. What was the headline?
It was along the lines of, you know, Bills will lean on Ken Dorsey with Derek Anderson leaving. So the first reaction for me and apparently the rest of Twitter was like, is Ken Dorsey playing? You know,
well, that would have been excitement on a May afternoon.
That would have been a lot of a real throwback, Gary.
Yeah. But Derek Anderson had a fascinating career.
Yes.
Good for him.
Yes. Very
saved a lot of jobs in Cleveland back in the day. Temporarily saved them, but saved them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
like seems like you have an Inman-like fondness for Anderson, an Andy-like fondness.
I don't think I did until I saw him just get battered in that Monday night game. And all I could think was, like, this guy was, like, doing his thing, like, going out golfing, enjoying life, and came back for this.
Right.
This is brutal.
It was brutal, yes.
All right, Jenny, that is a wrap.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming in and filling in for Andy, who is doing he's just like touring the country, meeting with head coaches now. And as you probably saw on the MMQB, if you didn't, Andy spent some time with Sean McVay talking about the Super Bowl in a piece. I don't know. He's going to have some good stuff coming up. Some of these are like secret meetings, though.
He
can't say what they're discussing. And some of them are secret. There's one AFC coach. He'll say it if he can say it, but I don't want to spoil it. But called Andy out to meet with coaches in front office, but Andy does not know why.
Doesn't know the purpose.
Like, usually there's a specific purpose to come out, and this guy has just been like, just come out. I'm not going to tell you why.
A lot of intrigue.
Yeah. So we'll see if he can address that. But that's a wrap.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks for coming in, Jenny. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor. Also, thank you to our producer, Brandon Nix, making this all sound good. We didn't need you as much this week. We're both in the studio. It wasn't Andy from Boise. Yeah, we did all right. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. Andy and I still, we've gotten some of them, but send in your all-average team nominees. You can send a whole team. You can just send a single player at a single position. Whatever you would like to do to get all of our shows. Jenny will be back on Wednesday with Connor and Albert. We will have our next bad football movie. I don't know what it's going to be. We have to choose more carefully, I guess, because too many people said Any Given Sunday was not a bad football movie. But that will be coming up next Friday. You'll get it all in your podcast feed if you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.